You are listening to...
I got my two Stanley Cup rings plug in my ear.
The Man Cave Podcast.
I'm a man! I love me!
With Jeremy Lambert.
Can't wait!
Yes, we're in the Man Cave. Joining me today, Sam Riccati. After our historic podcast that did 1.8 million clicks, we followed it up with this. What's up, buddy?
Nothing much. I'm thrilled that we made history and shattered all sorts of podcasting records.
We broke down barriers. We broke records. We did it all. You know, the only thing we didn't do was get a hug from Larry Zonka. He snubbed us.
Because he is not the Rosa Parks of 411. That's the main issue.
I guess.
But
so.
The amount of soccer moms who have given us a love compensate for the lack of hug from the boss. So I'm fine with that.
All right.
Too many inside references for one introduction. Let's move on.
UFC on Fuel TV 8, I believe. I think. I don't know. It's in Japan.
Does it matter? Yeah, there you go.
They're back in Japan with a really good UFC on Fuel card. This might be the best Fuel card ever, and it's going to break records probably as well. So, cool. Vanderlei Silva. Yeah, you don't think this is going to be the highest rated Fuel card of all time?
It depends on the timing. Since it's taking place in Japan, what time is it going to be shown in the U.S.?
It's 9 o'clock on Fuel, I believe.
Oh, all right. Yeah, then it really might be. I mean, it's by far the best card. I mean, honestly, I've seen worse pay-per-view cards that the UFC's put on in the past year.
Yeah.
Like
I would have...
The Franklin Silva card, for example.
I was about to say, I would have ordered this over Franklin and Silva.
Yeah. So, no, it's a really good card, especially for Fuel.
Main event, Vanderlei Silva, Brian Stann at light heavyweight for some reason. Neither guy ranked at light heavyweight, for those wondering. I don't think they're ranked at middleweight either. We all love Vanderlei Silva. I fear for him in this fight.
I'll put it this way. I think he'll get knocked out, but I think it's a very winnable fight.
Really?
I mean, I think it's a winnable fight, yes.
If he uses his grappling, I think it's winnable. If he tries to stand with Stan, I think
It's all going to end pretty. Don't get me wrong.
Okay.
It's one of those fights where I expect him to get crushed. At least the finish to be brutal. Not to get crushed, as in, it's not going to be completely one-sided as long as it's on the feet, but it's going to end badly, if that makes any sense.
I think Stan puts him away within the first 3 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, if it's going to be a knockout, it's going to be that early. I'm kind of going in reverse here, I guess, by making the prediction. But yeah, I do expect a quick knockout. The thing with Stan is that, and I feel this is what's probably going to win him the fight even more. Stan's boxing is not great. His footwork is not great. And defensively, he's not great. That's not what I feel will win him fight. But what will win him the fight is the fact that once he moves forward and tries to finish you, and I feel that against, you know, the slowed down version of Vanderlei, Stan should at least have confidence to try to do it, even if you run the risk of running across a counter, which I've always said this. Like, I feel Vanderlei, because he's wild and untechnical, doesn't get enough credit for actually having decent, just being able to somehow land this decent, wild right to hook, counter hook. I don't know how he does it. When that's pretty much the only punch he has, but actually it's a left hook, right hook. That's the only two punches he has, but whatever, he lands them. But the reason why I lean so heavily towards Stan is that when he has you on the ropes, figuratively, it's not just the punching. And he goes to the body a lot and with knees to the body. And Vanderlei, because he's got no head movement, I mean, even in his heyday, he never had head movement, let alone now. His natural reaction is to always just cover up, especially when you have him. Like, if Stan is going to have him against the fence and just wailing on him, Vanderlei is just going to cover up, and he's going to leave his body exposed. And I feel Stan is just going to be able to clobber him, either with knees. Remember the Chris Lieben finish? That was some pretty violent stuff by Stan. I actually see something similar here. As far as before that, I don't think the main issue, I think what's going to also lean the striking exchange towards Stan. In general, I don't think Stan is that good of a striker. I really don't. I favored Bisping to beat him. I thought, you know, he would catch Bisping early. Bisping survives and beat him. I'm still going to toot my own horn over just getting that fight absolutely right. I still don't think Stan overall is a good fighter, especially defensively. Not a good fighter, sorry, good striker, especially defensively. But he at least has got a notion of a jab. He tries to use it. You know, we saw the George Santiago fight. I feel like the striking exchanges might be similar. He's smart enough to be careful with Wanderlei, and to everybody who's going to fight Wanderlei, no matter at which stage of his career, they're going to have some respect for his power and what he's able to do. And with Wanderlei, even though you know what's coming, you know how he fights, he's still going to be able to catch you. You know, look at the Rich Franklin rematch, which he almost won. But the thing is, Stan, if he just fights long, I mean, Stan is not the super reachy, if that's a word, guy. But against Wanderlei, he's going to have the reach advantage. And all he has to do is just use his jab. And Wanderlei usually really has no answer for a jab. Because his punches himself are so loopy and he has no head movement and his footwork isn't that good, a jab is just going to keep finding its mark. That's virtually how he lost both Rich Franklin fights. You know what's going to happen. Stan, if he gets his jab working, he's just going to bloody Wanderlei's nose. Wanderlei's going to start having a hard time breathing. He's going to start tiring, and that's about it. The moment Wanderlei tires, it's pretty much over. This is where I think Stan is just going to have a field day with Wanderlei just against the fence, just wailing on him. For some reason, I picture the finish being against the fence. I don't know why. And just, you know, up close, landing uppercuts and knees to the body before Wanderlei eventually crumbles. The reason why I say it's winnable, because I feel Stan isn't a really great counter-striker or anything. So in one of those inevitable flurries where Wanderlei moves forward wildly, he could catch him. Except that I don't think Stan's chin is iffy or anything. I think he's got a solid chin. I don't think Wanderlei's power at middleweight is what it was at light heavyweight, to be honest.
What's so, the light heavyweight fight?
Really? That makes no sense.
Well, I agree, but my theory...
Aren't they both a middleweight? Isn't Stan... He's been fighting in middleweight for a while now. Since the Cantwell fight, he's moved down. Ever since the Phil Davis fight, he moved down.
My theory is that both guys are like, listen, we're flying to Japan. We ain't cutting no damn weight.
Oh. Well, maybe I should have researched this better, but in
I
my
told
defense...
you this when I set it up. Thanks for listening to me.
Oh, sorry. I don't know what I was reading. In my defense, we're recording this right after our two-hour historic podcast on Ronda Rousey. So to say I'm tired would be an understatement.
Good point excuse. Is, I gave is you good... the option to do this tomorrow, but
dude,
soccer
are
was
you
more
really
important.
Gonna crucify me because I wasn't aware that it's a middleweight. It doesn't change much anyway.
Apparently it does because Wanderlei Silva has better power.
You know, it's actually it does change a bit, but I think Wanderlei's he's lost some of his power overall. I don't think it's strictly a matter of weight, but I would feel better about him potentially getting a knockout at light heavyweight. The other thing is his cardio might be a bit better because his cardio has been pretty terrible at middleweight generally. The weight cut, I mean, at this age, I just don't think a weight cut is something Wanderlei should be doing. I mean, he picked a weird time to drop down to middleweight anyway after having fought most of his career at light heavyweight. You remember the first catchweight fight with Franklin? He looked horrible, and that was like a 190-pound fight, right? 195,
yeah,
maybe.
195.
Yeah.
His last fight was at 190.
Again?
The Franklin fight.
The Franklin weight is, you know, always ever so variable. Or ever so varying, whatever.
That's why I wanted Wanderlei to win that second fight, so they could do the rubber match at 185.
No, it should be a wacky weight, like 187.5. You know, it should be something like that. It shouldn't be 185 would be middleweight.
Oh, okay, that's fine.
If you're fighting Rich Franklin, you shouldn't never fight at a proper weight class. It should be something. Remember when Rich Franklin wanted the UFC to create a 195-pound division? That was so stupid, and people were in favor of it. After Wanderlei lost to like Quinn Jackson or something, they were like, "Yeah, guys like Franklin and Wanderlei are kind of undersized."
And they were like, "Franklin, Wanderlei, Tito could cut that extra."
Dan Henderson,
Liddell at that time. Yeah, everybody wanted that.
dead and buried right now. All these guys are either retired over the hill or whatever. Oh, dude. That's basically why they wanted it.
They want, because remember the talk of like the Legends division and stuff?
Yeah, essentially they wanted it for has-been fighters. Over the hill fighters.
Pretty much.
Right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Mean, I it sucks to say that about Liddell and Vanilla and guys that I really love, but yeah. And the Legends division was so stupid. It's like saying a women's division, as though all women on Earth are going to fight under one weight class just because they're women. Legends division, yeah.
What are you talking
Gracie,
about? Yeah, I was going to say, we're going to have Hoist Gracie against KOTOR and stuff.
Yeah, that's the Legends division I want. Hoist Gracie against Krokop, not even KOTOR. Oh, dude. Anyway, back to the fight.
Gracie and Krokop would be pretty sweet. Let's get Japan on that.
You know they'd make it.
I know.
Actually, no, they'd make Sakuraba croak up too, because they feel Sakuraba hasn't got enough brain damage yet.
Oh, he's done. He's doing pro wrestling full time now.
Dude, but that's why the Japanese are pissed. They're like, no, there are extra brain cells we haven't killed off yet.
Some Japanese pro wrestler will drop him on his head and make good on it. That'll be fine.
Dude, what do you mean stupid? That's how Japanese pro wrestlers wrestle anyway. Isn't that the whole thing? Dropping fighters on their head?
Yeah, more
Isn't
or less.
How Misawa died?
Yeah, too many bumps, yeah.
Yeah, and bumps on the head as well. Like the whole, you know, their whole suplexes on the head and the way they kick.
Strong style, motherfucker. Either you take it or you get the fuck out of Japan.
I wish you could say that in Japanese.
Yeah, I don't know how.
Yeah, don't even try.
Konnichiwa, anyway, bitches!
Oh, hey, I was just about to say, don't even try, because I'm pretty sure you're going to say something verging on racist. Anyway, or at least highly stereotypical. Which
I just
did.
Said hello. That's all I know how to say.
But yeah, it's highly stereotypical, not racist.
Sure.
Yeah. Maybe I'm sorry I overestimated you by saying racist.
I'm leaning towards Vanderlei Silva in this fight now, just dude, because it's in Japan. And I think he's going to be on Japanese TRT.
What is Japanese TRT, though?
Steroids.
Okay. Yeah, because that's pretty much what he's been on in his days in Pride.
Exactly.
I think it's possible. I think it gives me more faith. No, but that's the thing. Like, let's try take two with the fight analysis. I feel like Stan is going to be using his jab. I think he's going to be able to keep Vanderlei at bay. I found Vanderlei, I throw a lot of kicks, but be extremely careful with the counters. No body kicks, because Vanderlei isn't actually very tall. And anytime he throws a body kick, it usually comes within that Rich Franklin distance where you get countered and killed. And Stan, actually, when it comes to countering kicks, he's good. His timing on countering kicks is good. Speaking of which, Vanderlei is really good at doing that as well.
So what you're saying is this going to be a boxing match?
No, they're both going to be throwing kicks at the same time and countering each other's respective kicks at the same time. It's going to be glorious. It's not something very Japanese-like. You know, everything wacky is probably, you know, something the Japanese would appreciate. Stan's timing on countering punches in terms of like stepping them and countering isn't that good. He's usually doing much better when he sees the aggressor. His main weakness, though, is fighting the way Michael Bisping fought against him, which is like getting on the bicycle, jabbing, landing combos and moving. And obviously,
yeah, but Vanderlei ain't doing that shit.
Silva is not going to be doing any of that. So, you know, there goes that theory.
I think Stan's striking is pretty decent when he's not just looking to headhunt. Like, when he is aggressive, he is better. But when he's just looking, like, I felt he did that too much against Bisping, is he was, you know, he had him hurt the first time, and then after that, it was just, he just wanted to take the guy's head off. If he just, you know, stayed aggressive, but not over aggressive to where he was just looking for the big knockout, I think that fight could have been different.
Yeah,
but
he should fight the way he fought against George Santiago. That was a very good incarnation of Brian Stan, where he uses his jab, and he obviously Santiago's chin, even Vanderlei has a better chin than, even at this point, Vanderlei's broken down chin is still better, much better than Jorge Santiago's. Right. But still, his entire approach in that fight was pretty salient. You know, use your jab, wait for your opportunity, and then, you know, land that right cross when you find the opening. I feel if he does that against Vanderlei and doesn't really force the issue too much, I think he's going to be fine. And keep in mind, as I said earlier, once he starts bloodying up Vanderlei with jabs, Vanderlei is going to tire. And that's when Stan would then be able to afford to headhunt and move forward. If I'm Stan, I'd stay clear of body kicks because Wanderlei has really good timing on them, not just in terms of countering, but in terms of getting the takedowns. And I think this is, if Wanderlei is going to win the fight, it's either by landing like a, you know, trademark flurry or something like that, or by kind of making it similar to the Bisping fight, where even though he's getting outstruck, he keeps it clean. He keeps it close. Sorry, I don't know why I said clean. He keeps it close and then does one significant thing to kind of sneak in the round. Against Bisping, he did that in 2 out of 3 rounds. One of them was a knockdown and one of them was a guillotine attempt. He needs something similar against Tan. And one of something like that could be like, you know, timing a kick and tripping him to the ground. He does that really well. He did it to Bisping. He did it to Franklin. If he does that and spends some time on top, then maybe he can, you know, sneak in like a couple of 10-9 rounds and that's about it and win the fight somehow. So Stan should stay clear of body kicks, especially leg kicks are a different issue, but he should stay clear of body kicks. And I feel he should be patient. I think the knockout is going to come eventually. And even if it doesn't, he should be able to outstrike Wanderlei. But as long as he doesn't try to force it. Because if he does, as I said, Wanderlei does have underrated counter-striking. And when I say counter-striking, I'm obviously not talking about Anderson Silva, but like counter-striking. But he does catch you moving in. He's got good timing. Wanderlei, in general, is one of those people who's got good timing. Unfortunately, you know, Wanderlei made a career of overwhelming you with pure aggression. You know, MMA in general, is a combat sport that really rewards offense. You look at guys like, obviously, when you have terrific defense like Lyoto Machida and much more importantly Anderson Silva, and you can combine that with great offense, meaning counter striking effectively, it's a whole different ball game. But in general, you look at like Junior Dos Santos, Nick Diaz, these guys, even Ben Henderson, these guys are all about moving forward and, you know, landing offense, however different it might be. Nick Diaz fights nothing like Ben Henderson. But just see the approach of just overwhelming offense, whether it's through takedowns.
Well, listen. Like, the octagon.
You're going to say something stupid, aren't you?
The rules of the octagon, you know, reward effective aggression, not effective get on your bicycle and move back. So, of course, it rewards offense.
Actually, funny you said that. What nobody seems to realize is that the fifth criterion is effective defense. You read it in the unified rules.
On the list, though. Yeah, that's not
right
important.
Effective. Yeah, well, whatever. Point is, for some reason, the UFC omits that when stating their rules of the octagon.
Well, even better.
I don't understand why, though. I really never understood why. Like, there are
because
five
we don't want no defensive people in the UFC. Get
sure,
that shit out of here.
I honestly feel
come to war.
I really do. So, anyway, before you interrupted me with that stupid comment.
Effective aggression, striking, grappling, and octagon control. Aggression is first.
No, it's effective striking, grappling, aggression, and octagon control. That's what he said. It's effective striking first, effective grappling second. And I love how they say aggression, but omit the effective part for aggression, even though if you read the unified rules, it's effective aggression.
No,
and then
just aggression. Listen,
it's
you're
third, actually. It's
fuck
not first.
This unified rules stuff. This is where you're going wrong. You need to get under the UFC rules.
The Dana White rules,
yeah.
This
is Dana White's world. MMA is just part of it.
Oh, true, true, true. Anyway, Box, so we can wrap up this.
MMA doesn't exist. The UFC does.
Dude, just let me wrap up this stupid goddamn fight. I have to go to bed already.
Says the man who took a nap earlier.
Yeah, because I slept like 2 hours last night. So if I hadn't taken a nap,
hey, listen, if we don't need to hear about your sleep schedule, just wrap up the fight, Sammer.
Sorry, yeah. No, you know what? Continue talking about your world that Dana White controls by being a tyrant. Actually, that sounds about the real world. You're right. Yeah. I feel like Wanderlei needs to find that one. This is what he's sort of been trying to do recently, where it looks like, let's face it, it looks like he's getting outclassed and everything. But, you know, he looks for that one opening where he can move forward and throw. And if it connects, it connects. If it doesn't, then, you know.
Oh, it's coming. It's coming, Joe. You can feel it. You can just feel Wanderlei. He's about to swarm on him. Joe, watch for the flurry, Joe. It's coming right here.
Joe, go interview him, Joe. The fight is over. But, yeah, that's a Rich Franklin fight where Wanderlei was just dead. And Mike Goldberg kept promising us. But you feel that Vanderlei has one final flurry in him, Joe, and he just kept hyping it up, and the dude was dead tired.
Never delivered. I was so disappointed, Vanderlei. How dare you prove Mike Goldberg wrong? Goldberg was building to this big climactic moment, and dude, Vanderlei was like, just like, nope.
Remember the Rich Franklin, not a Rich Franklin, remember the second Forrest and Tito fight? That last round, oh, Forrest beating him up, like, the entire round, and the last 30 seconds, and Goldberg says it as if it's supposed to be game-changing. He's like, you just feel Tito has one last takedown in him, Joe. Oh, and so what? And he takes him down. He's been getting his ass kicked for 4 minutes. That changes what exactly? Oh, dude. Yeah, any reason to bury Mike Goldberg. Anyway.
He's not even doing commentary for this fight.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
John Anik will say it. We concluded that just those chairs make people stupid.
Right, yeah, you sit in the booth and the Mike Goldberg virus is just going to So anyway, Vanderlei can't nail that flurry. I don't see how he wins, with the exception of getting that well-timed counter. So he better hope for it. But otherwise, Vanderlei just needs to try to fight. I know it starts an oxymoron. It sounds like an oxymoron setup for a Vanderlei fight. But he needs to try to fight smart. If I'm Vanderlei, I'd sit back, try to throw some kicks, and try to time a kick and take a takedown, and then just go for a flurry every now and then, or just time a counter. But if he wants to fight the way he usually fights, it's just not going to end well for him. You know, that's what he did against Michael Bisping, and it paid off. If he can pull it off another time, then more power to him. I still think it's a winnable fight, because defensively, Stannis still has some holes in his striking. Unfortunately, as we said, it's not that he gets hit by haymakers. It's he gets hit by more technical approach, where, you know, a jab, some kicks, and combinations. And, you know, Vanderlei isn't that guy. So I feel, you know, I actually feel Stan will fight smart initially. Go for, you know, his jab, bloody up Vanderlei a bit, and then put him away with like a flurry against the fence, where he goes a lot to the body, either late in the first round or early in the second.
I think Stan finishes him within the first 3 minutes. I love Vanderlei. This one's not going to end well for him.
Yeah, we all love Vanderlei, but, you know, this one is not going to end well for him. We've been hearing it since 2009, and it's generally been pretty true, so.
Well, he's going to be in Japan. Vanderlei's going to appease to the crowd. He's going to move forward, and he's just going to get beat up.
But, you know, these international shows do tend to have their moments, remember? Like, but this is not in Brazil. If it had been in Brazil, Vanderlei would have won this no problem, obviously. But you never know if the stars align. And obviously, I'm speaking out of my ass. Vanderlei's probably going to lose that fight. But it'd be pretty cool if he were to win in Japan.
Oh, obviously. It would be awesome if he won. And then he should just fucking retire, so he doesn't face someone like Vitor Belfort and get murdered.
Now I understand why Vanderlei took the Brian Stan fight. He didn't want to fight Stan earlier, remember, because he's a war hero and the crowd would boo Vanderlei against Stan.
Yeah, but he's like, Japan, whatever, they're going to love me. And he'd be like, this motherfucker bombed Pearl Harbor from America.
Oh, dude, come on now. The funny thing is, Vanderlei probably didn't realize that the crowd would probably, especially the fight was supposed to take place in Vegas, the crowd would probably cheer him over Stan.
Oh, but, easily.
Well, yeah. But whatever. Anyway, I truly hope Vanderlei Silva wins. I usually don't use that word, you know, saying, oh, I hope this fighter wins or whatever. Unless, you know, it's obvious guys like GSP and whatever. But, you know, Vanderlei Silva, who doesn't love him?
Gonna put on the good show for the fans.
For my fans, not the fans.
Yeah, that's right.
Mark Hunt. You need to get your Vanderleiisms correctly.
Yeah, I guess so.
Other than getting knocked out.
That's the thing with Vanderlei. Like, he doesn't just get, you know, knocked out, dropped, finished, ref pulls off, whatever. This dude, he goes out cold, which I think that makes it even worse.
And he has the most depressing post-knockout face as well. Post-getting knocked out face. Once they wake him up and everything, it looks depressing and never feel as badly for anybody else.
Yeah. I hope he's on the Japanese TRT.
He does look like one of these guys who, even though, you know, he's a killer, a solid killer inside the ring, at least he used to be a killer in Pride. He does look like somebody who's genuinely kind-hearted. I don't know how it works. He does look like a sweet soul, or sound like a sweet soul, especially when he's speaking broken-down English, speaking about his fans, and as cliched as it is, it sounds like he means it. You know, he's talking about his fans and everything. Oh, dude, I love Vanderlei Silva.
He's awesome. I hope he's on the Japanese TRT and he wins this fight.
I do as well.
Mark Hunt.
I love how you're trying to play up this Japanese TRT game. You're really trying to trademark it. All right.
That's my new thing. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's copyright, Lambert.
Yeah.
JTRT. Okay. You should just call it JTRT. Just start talking about it on Twitter. Like, yeah, I think, you know, this guy's on JTRT or whatever.
Oh, already know this is getting used in my roundtable breakdown of this fight. Japanese TRT. I gotta, you know, get the Japanese part to catch on. You can't shorten something before, you know, people know what it is.
Yeah,
that's just weird.
That's the thing. That's the thing. You should just start using JTRT and have people wonder what the fuck is this, and then just act like everybody knows what it is. Sort of like Joe Rogan using these weird position names for jiu-jitsu, like, he's got the monkey crackhead control. And then we're supposed to know what that is.
I'm sending out a tweet right now.
All right, there you go. See?
I have a feeling that Vanderlei Silva will be on the JTRT this Saturday. This is great radio.
This is phenomenal radio.
This podcast doesn't go up until like Thursday or maybe Friday, and they're going to be like, wait, that tweet was sent at 10:20 on Tuesday.
I don't think people are going to remember when you sent out that tweet.
Sure they are. Are you kidding me? Radulich will know.
You're giving yourself way too much credit.
No, I just know Radulich will know.
Yeah, well, Radulich is awesome.
He is. Mark Hunt. Speaking of great people that Mark Radulich likes, Mark Hunt, dude. And Stefan Struve.
Oh, my God. Right now, that's the sign of Mark Radulich doing something.
Feverishly masturbating.
I was going to say touching himself, and then I was like, you know what? No, don't say it, but I can always count on you for being inappropriate.
Of course.
Slightly disturbing.
No, Mark Radulich.
Very weird mental image. Oh, God. This podcast is horrible, but let's just move on. Seriously. Stop about Mark Radulich. Please just stop.
All I'm saying is he loves Mark Hunt.
Right? Yeah, but we both insinuated that he might love him a bit too much.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Mark Hunt should have gotten that title shot instead of Frank Mir. I love Mark Hunt, too. You know I'm on the Mark Hunt bandwagon.
Yeah, of course you do.
Radulich surpasses me, if you can believe that.
I do. I mean, I've talked to Radulich before. I read what he says on the forums. I know he surpasses you.
Well, yeah. I'm talking in general audience, if you people listening can believe that.
Ah, all right. I thought you were talking to me.
No. You're not the only one who listens to me, Sammer. Apparently you don't listen to me since I had to tell you Silva and Stan is at light heavyweight 3 times.
Oh, it's been like 3 hours. Cut me some slack.
All right. Mark on Stefan Struve. He hates Stefan Struve too for some reason, I think.
Why? Isn't he a heavyweight?
Yeah, but, you know, he's a skinny heavyweight. He's not that big, overblown guy. I don't think Radulich is, you know, when Stefan Struve fought LeVar Johnson, he's like, oh, LeVar Johnson's going to kill this poor kid.
The funniest part about this is you'll never let him hear the end of this. You keep bringing this up every time, the LeVar Johnson thing.
Do I?
Oh, dude, yeah, you keep bringing him up that he picked, you know, LeVar Johnson to beat Stefan Struve. Dude, he picked, and I always refute with the same, he picked James Toney to beat Randy Couture.
Oh, exactly.
This couldn't possibly nearly as bad. So why do you keep harping on the less preposterous prediction?
I'm bringing it up here to show his hate for Stefan Struve.
Oh, all right, all right. No, because usually when you bring it up, it's like, haha, you know, he picked him.
I don't realize I bring it up that much.
Ah, you do.
Oh.
See, right. I listen to you.
That or you're just making shit up to make it sound like you listen to me.
Oh, dude, come on now.
Well, it's relevant here because I think he hates Stefan Struve because he's not a big, overblown heavyweight. He's a skinny dude like me. Mark Radulich hates these skinny people.
Ah, okay. Well, that explains... No, that actually doesn't explain anything. I don't even know what it is, skinny people, but whatever.
Struve is going to submit Mark Hunt.
Yeah, let's cut to the point. Actually, you know what? Let's be genuine here. is it really that unfathomable that Mark Hunt just clobbers Stefan Struve and kills him? Because Stefan Struve is pretty damn hittable. He's a slow starter. They say he's got a good chin, but he really doesn't. I don't think
Who says he has a good chin?
Because he sometimes he produces these comebacks, you know. Oh. But that's the thing with Stefan Struve. If he doesn't come back, he gets killed. It's like it's one or the other. And if you're gonna take a punch from Mark Hunt, chances are you're not coming back. And it is a possibility. You know, you might even say that. I do believe that Mark Hunt possesses the overall better boxing. But if Stefan Struve fights smart, and there have been small hints of that recently. No, honestly.
No, I know there has.
There has been a bit of like slight signs of Stefan Struve wising up. Maybe he got hit in the head too much and it actually wised him up. I don't know if that works in reverse. But if he does that again in this fight, he just strictly uses his kicks. You know, just front kicks, push kicks all day. Maybe a bit of leg kicks, takes, and that's about it. And then just time the takedown, take him down. And let's face it, if he takes him down, he submits him within seconds. Because Stefan Struve is actually, you know, really a decent heavyweight grappler. He's really good at finishing submissions, whether it's from the top or from the bottom. On that note, I don't think it'd be a stupid idea for him to pull a guard.
I think he pulls guard. He does what he did against LeVar Johnson, just pulls guard and either sweeps him or locks him in an armbar.
I feel he either pulls guard, triangle, armbar, or he sweeps him and gets like a kimura or something like that. So Stefan Struve definitely has more obvious ways towards victory, but there's always that fear with Stefan Struve that he just takes a punch and gets killed, or does something stupid. Oh, God forbid.
He throws
a flying knee or something. And, you know, this is not Paul Buentello. If he catches you with an over-the-counter overhand right, you're dead. So, you know what I mean? So it's you don't want to play with fire against Mark Hunt. I mean, not with his power, at least. But, I do feel Struve is going to throw some kicks. Maybe he'll get into the occasional wild exchange, but if he keeps it to a minimum, he survives and or doesn't get hit, and eventually he takes him down. Whether he trips him, I feel he can like just clinch up and trip him, obviously. But if not, I mean, why not even pull guard and either sweep or just, you know, finish him from top? I'll go with Stefan Struve by kimura.
Stefan Struve by submission. I'm not picking the exact submission. Leg lock, damn it.
All right, whatever. I'd be surprised, but you get the props if he pulls off a leg lock.
Come on, Struve. Don't let me down. Takanori Gomi against Diego Sanchez, fighting for the first time in 5 years.
Huh?
Diego Sanchez, it's only been a year since he fought Jake Ellenberger. Doesn't that fight seem like years ago, though? At least 2 years, it feels like.
Not to me, because I still remember that I was picking Ellenberger right towards the end, and at the end of my breakdown, I was like, nah, you know what? I changed my mind. Diego wins this, and it feels recent. So.
Oh, well, Diego Sanchez, he fought Campman in March of 2011, fought Ellenberger in March of 2012.
Yeah, but that's what I was about to say. He does feel like it does feel like it's been forever since Diego fought.
Yeah.
It's been forever since he's been active. Like, not just maybe he fights every now and then, but like, ever since that BJ Penn loss, he's just kind of like been there.
Yeah.
I don't know. He then moved back to welterweight, lost to John Hathaway, and made us believe Hathaway is a prospect. And he's just been like, and now he moves back to lightweight. And it's just been, I don't know, since that BJ Penn loss, his career has really been kind of random and chaotic.
Well, he's going to beat Takanori Gomi, unless he's on the JTRT as well.
Well, I mean, Gomi, to his credit, he was surprisingly impressive. And
he's
again,
in Japan.
Impressive.
He didn't have to fly east.
Well, yeah.
No, or whatever that thing is.
You fly west to America. You fly east to Japan.
Yeah, so he didn't have to fly west to America. He got to stay east.
You said he didn't fly. Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I know that you suck at geography, so that's fine.
This is true.
Yeah, I know. I wasn't even joking. You told me.
No, I'm telling everybody right now.
I think they've noticed.
Well, now yeah. I'm confirming it. They needed a second source, and I've provided it.
Yeah, your history is good, apparently. You know that the Japanese bombarded the Pearl Harbor, so... You know, but apparently every American knows.
Oh, that was real? I just saw it on South Park.
I thought you were going to talk about that shitty Ben Affleck movie. Not Argo, fuck yourself.
Oh, no, that movie did suck.
Oh, you watched Pearl Harbor?
Yeah, I've seen Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it did suck.
Yeah, that movie was terrible.
Yeah. Okay. So, I actually hate that Ben Affleck is turning into a decent actor slash director because I used to hate
So do the people at South Park. I don't get how you don't like South Park.
Because Family Guy always makes fun of Ben Affleck either, and I'm more of a either. I mean, I meant two, and I'm more of a Family Guy fan.
Oh, Seth MacFarlane must have been pissed.
I don't like South Park. I just don't watch it. I don't know why.
You should.
I don't know. Listen, you know me. Like, I don't watch too much television outside of sports. Like, all I watch is DVDs, documentaries, and sports. And recently, I made time in my television life for Dexter, so that's about it.
Make time for South Park.
I can't.
You suck.
All right. Fair enough. Maybe I do. What were we talking about? Yeah, Stefan Struve and Mark Hunt. Well, we talked about that. Gomi. Yeah, I was about to say, Gomi looked fairly impressive by his low standards these days against
Mac Danzig.
And I was actually surprised that in bits in that fight, he reverted back to his wrestling and took Danzig down. And just even on the feet, he went a lot to the body. In his heyday, that's part of what made Gomi so great. He would just completely destroy your body with punches. In MMA, usually guys who really work the body, it tends to be with either knees or kicks. But Gomi, you know, back in the day, he would just change stances. First of all, he used to be one of the best guys at fighting from both stances, which made him a bit unpredictable on the feet, despite the fact that he wasn't really technical and a bit wild. He would just completely destroy your body, and then he'd land that haymaker. And he was a decent wrestler to boot, so, you know, he had that, you know, using your wrestling in reverse shit, which was really popular at the time with, you know, Krokop, Liddell, and Gomi himself. You know, that was the era back then. Obviously, he's deteriorated. He's slowed down. His wrestling isn't that good. His submission defense is still terrible. But against Danzig, there were signs that, you know, he's done well. That doesn't mean anything. I mean, remember when he knocked out Tyson Griffin, then, you know, proceeded to look horrible after that. And Gomi's never gonna, you know, suddenly put together 3-4 fights impressively at this stage of his career, I don't think. I mean, it's been a while since he's been consistent anyway. But Diego's chin is good. You got to take that into account as well. I mean, Gomi could put anybody out. No doubt about it. And he's got a good killer instinct as well. So maybe he lands that, you know, wild left hook and then just finishes him after that. Who knows? But if you're Diego, you fight it safe initially on the feet, and then you shoot for takedowns. You create scrambles, get dominant positions. And the moment he takes Gomi's back or lands on top of him, it's either rear naked choke or arm triangle, really. I know Diego hasn't submitted anybody in a while, but he should be able to submit Gomi. I really think so. Part of me is leaning towards a decision just because I'm not sure about Diego anymore. But he's fighting Gomi. I mean, if he lands on top, and Diego, to his credit, you know, he's got cardio. We know that's why he's got that. He used to have that nightmare nickname, apparently. It's something to do with him not getting tired. Apparently, that's his worst nightmare. So he called himself the nightmare. Now he's called the dream, which is an awful, awful nickname.
Because he dreams about the championship that will never happen.
Well, so maybe it is an apt nickname. So Diego, if he can tire Gomi out, and I feel Gomi will take care of that himself. He's going to get tired anyway. But I do see like a late third round finish, because one thing you'd always count on when it comes to Gomi, he'll submit himself. If you're looking for that arm triangle, he'll just rotate right into it. If you have his back, oh, dude, he's the best and rotating right into the rear naked choke the moment you have your back. When he's trying to defend it and just spin back so that, you know, he, you don't have your, he doesn't have his back to you, he's always going to try to spin the wrong way right into the choke. So, you know, count on that happening for this fight. This is actually my prediction. Diego Sanchez, rear naked choke after Gomi messes up.
Yeah, I think the same thing. I think it comes in the second round, though.
Okay.
That's my prediction. I don't have anything to add.
Fair enough.
Yushin Okami, Hector Lombard. I like this fight.
You didn't do that Japanese Gomi Takanori kit.
No, I think he's losing. So
I remember that bit was hilarious. You remember when you predicted he was going to be? I did as well. But, you know, you ended the podcast with Gomi, Takanori, whatever. And the way, what's his name? The Pride commentator, the Pride announcer. It's pretty famous. I'll try to remember his name, whatever. But yeah, that was hilarious. That was actually one of our first podcasts. I don't know why it sticks out to me. That's probably because it was my first taste of your wackiness, really. I was like, what the hell is wrong with him? Why the hell did he do that? But then in time, I got used to it. And
here we are.
Here we are, missing it. I'm demanding it. Yeah, okay. All right, so
Hector Sanchez. Lombard and Yushin Okami.
That's actually stylistically the most interesting fight on the card by far.
No, I like this fight.
Yeah, no, I really like it. But it could turn out to be a huge snooze fest, by the way.
Oh,
I know,
yeah.
People are going to act surprised because Hector Lombard, his highlight reel, whatever.
He's back!
One thing about Hector Lombard, at least he's been active since moving to the... I mean, he hasn't been in the UFC for long, and already this is going to be his third fight, so...
He's back, you know, after knocking out Husamar Paulhares, though. That's the Hector Lombard they signed. That's the Hector Lombard they paid like $200,000 for that got John Fitch
cut.
That's
the Hector Lombard who... If he doesn't knock out Okami early, which is a tough ass, is going to look horrible in this fight.
Well, that's the Hector Lombard that was against Timbosh. Yeah. By the way, I got this fight wrong.
What do you mean?
Number 4 ranked Yushin Okami against number 8 ranked Hector Lombard. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. What was your initial rankings, or you didn't give
rankings? I didn't give the rankings.
Ah, all right. Well, then you got it horribly wrong.
Yeah. And Stefan Struve is the number 9 ranked heavyweight. Those are the only people ranked on this card.
Well, then it's probably not as good as we thought.
I guess not. I'm shocked that, you know, Brian Stann can't be
Brian
a top
Stann
10
is not ranked? Yeah, that's weird.
And who else? Well, Sanchez hasn't fought in forever, and obviously Gomi's not being ranked, so...
All right, enough with the rankings. Yeah, anyway. The thing is, like, Hector Lombard, obviously, if he can land that right hook, left hook, whatever, he's got power in pretty much every punch he has. If he doesn't land it early, he gets tentative. And again, he's never somebody who throws with volume. He just looks for that punch. And he's got good head movement. He'll generally, I mean, defensively, he's not flawed or anything. But he's going to be looking for that one punch. And it's possible to land it on Okami. It's really possible that he'd land that uppercut and his night. We saw Timbosh do something similar. But let's face it, Okami is not going to be aggressive and give Lombard that opening. He's going to try to stay back, jab a bit, and then we're going to see a lot of clinching. And Hector Lombard, you know, with his judo background and him being generally really good in the clinch, is going to nullify that. Which means a lot of stalemates, a lot of clinch stalemates. However, I do see Okami being more of the aggressor. And if he survives the first round, if he doesn't get knocked out in the first round, I really think he's going to take over in the next two rounds. And by takeover, I don't mean – it's not like he's going to start taking Lombard down at will or anything. Even though Okami is a decent wrestler or anything, he's not like a powerhouse who's just going to take anybody down. Most of his takedowns come from the clinch anyway, and Lombard is no dummy there by any means. But he's going to be clinching a lot, putting him against the fence, maybe land a few knees to the body. And I see it being – maybe a clinch fest version of the Tim Boach Hector Lombard fight with Okami winning.
Yeah, I think Okami's going to win. I mean, I like this fight because, you know, both these guys are top middleweights.
Yeah, two very good fighters.
Yeah. I think it's going to be boring as hell, though.
Yeah, me too.
I do favor Okami. As you said, Lombard, always has that power, especially in the first round. But if he doesn't get you in the first round, he's probably not going to get you at all.
Yeah, pretty much. And, I mean, there are things Okami needs to be worried of. Like, he still doesn't sit on his jab properly, and a good counter-striker could capitalize. But let's face it, how many people in MMA know how to counter a jab? I mean, I'd say none.
Rashad Evans. Did you see the way he parried Nogueras all the time? That's the perfect counter.
He parried
counter.
It, but didn't counter it, unfortunately. He only went halfway.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't see Lombard capitalizing on that, unfortunately. But, you know, I do see a day where MMA fighters are going to start improving to the point where if you don't throw a jab properly, you can pay for it. But not today.
We'll be dead by the time that day comes.
And certainly not Hector Lombard.
Yeah. So we both like Okami. Mizuto Hirota against Hani Yaya.
I like Hani Yaya on this one. I think one thing about Hani Yaya that I like is that he's sort of like the initial version of Damian Maia. And actually, well, Damian Maia is kind of going back to his roots now, isn't he? Yeah. He knows his limitations on the feet. He knows that. So he's just going to try to walk forward, Ronda Rousey style, just walk forward and try to get that takedown or poor guard or any means to get the fight to the ground and try to work you from there. And I think he'll have success using that strategy, actually. I really do. I think, you know, after seeing like Hirota get out-grappled to an extent by Pat Healy, not actually to an extent, he got out-grappled.
Did he really? That fight was a fucking clinch fest. He didn't really get out-grappled. I think you're misremembering that fight.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, fair enough.
I think it was a lot of clinch work, and Healy was more active in the clinch, but Hirota was... like, it's not like Healy landed a ton of takedowns. And if he did, there was not much control there. He didn't keep him down long.
That's the thing with Yaya. If he can initiate the clinch, he doesn't even have to get a takedown. He's just going to pull guard. He's actually one of the few who are still capable of doing that. Just pulling. I mean, it's rare these days to see MMA fighters pulling guard. But I think Yaya is actually one of the few who could still do that and maybe look to sweep from there. And, you know, Hirota, though, to his credit, I mean, remember back when right before he fought Shinya Aoki, people thought that was a dangerous fight for Aoki. And that was a time where Aoki, you know, he had yet to lose a lot. And, you know,
Aoki doesn't lose in Japan, though. He's on that JTRT.
Oh, that's true. Well, he doesn't look like it, I'll say that. He had just destroyed Satoru Kitaoka and Ishida, I think. And people treated that as a dangerous fight for Aoki. Though, to his credit, the Aoki didn't even like. Isn't that the fight where Aoki got that hammerlock and then
broke his arm and then flipped him off?
And then flipped him off. That was awesome.
That was
absolutely so. But then let's face it, Aoki. I was gonna say Hatsuhi Aoki. Shinya Aoki is a different kind of grappler, as Joe Rogan would like to say, top of the food chain.
Top of the food chain, world class.
Well, at least in MMA, he absolutely is. Hani Yaya's jiu-jitsu in general is more conventional. He's not as creative as Aoki, and the submission is not going to come out of nowhere. But if he gets on top of you, he's going to pass your guard. And he's got a really good front headlock control series, whether it's like guillotines, north-south chokes, all this, you know, Darsh Anaconda chokes. You know, he's been taught that one from Brendan Schaub, I heard. You know, he's really versatile in that regard. Not to mention from the bottom, he's got like decent arm bars, triangles. I feel his submission arsenal is too vast. I don't think he'll submit Hirota for that matter. I really don't. But I feel that he's going to be able to out-grapple him. Even in the clinch, I think he'll take him down. I think he'll at least pull guard and sweep. And unless Hirota could keep it on the feet and then just strike him, which is a possibility because Hani Yaya's striking is pretty terrible. You know, remember the Chad Mendes fight and how bad that looked in it? And Joe Rogan kept harping on him. And, you know, people thought Chad Mendes would be a tough test for Jose Aldo because his striking looked good, apparently, against Hany Yahya.
I think Hirota beats Hany Yahya.
No, I'm actually, I really favor Hany Yahya on this one.
Fine.
I think you really think Hirota beats him?
Yeah, sure. Who cares?
Well, I agree about who cares, but I
think Hirota is able to keep it standing. He's the much better striker, as you said. Hany
Yahya is the much better striker, absolutely. If anything, by default.
Well, no, he's actually a pretty decent striker.
No. I mean, if like at the very least, it's by default he's going to be the much better striker because it's against Hany Yahya. I'm not undermining his striking or anything.
Okay, well, I think he's able to keep it standing, and I think he just outstrikes him.
I think Hany Yahya has this one.
All right, fine. Dongyeon Kim, Sire Bahadurzada.
Bahadurzada, there you go.
Yeah, I got it right.
Yeah. Yeah, but I was trying to rush through things because it was going to take you a while.
Well,
actually,
it didn't.
Favor Sierra
and
Bahadur
you just
Zada.
Made things longer.
That's
what she said.
Oh, we both made horrible jokes.
We were close. We were close.
Yeah, but mine was mean. I'm sorry about that.
Nah, whatever. I expect it.
Okay.
You're an abusive lover, as Radulich likes to say.
Not Radulich. I think that. Oh, yeah, that's Radulich just said that. That's true. I'm an abusive lover. Oh, God. That's why we're so good together, partner. Long mic bump. Yeah, anyway. Okay, so what fight is it again?
Bahadurzada.
Oh, see, I really. Here's the thing. Obviously, Sierra is Bahadurzada is a much better striker, and all the feet, this dude doesn't fuck around. If he hits you, he kills you. But. Dongyeon Kim has, like, he's got a certain physicality about him when it comes to the clinch that just I've not seen, you know, much like it, in at least in the welterweight division, when it comes to just getting the clinch and then putting people on their back. And one thing I still have yet to see, and I say that before every fight of his, and I have yet to see it, the dude used to have some disturbing ground and pound. Like, when he went to town on you with elbows, he absolutely killed you. And we don't see that anymore. But he's still a very good grappler on top. Like, he out-grappled... I'm not going to say he out-grappled Nate Diaz. Actually, that's not really fair because Nate Diaz really worked well from the bottom. But, you know, he's still good from the top. He could still he's got decent guard passing. It never really amounts to anywhere when it comes to locking up submissions or anything. But he is exhausting to deal with from top position. And that's a problem if Bahadurzada is going to be taken down. But ultimately, I do think Bahadurzada is the more dynamic fighter. And Dongyeon Kim on the feet, he's just not good. And he tries to compensate for that by being aggressive. And I don't think that's a good idea against Sierra Bahadurzada. I think he wins this fight, actually. I think he knocks Dongyeon Kim out.
I'm going with Bahadurzada because I root for violence.
Well, he does bring the violence, that's for sure.
Ricky Fukuda against, oh man, guess who Fukuda's taking on? This fight's not even close, honestly.
Who's he fighting?
I'm going to give you one guess, and here's your hint. The greatest takedown defense in middleweight history.
Oh, dude, Brad Tavares?
Yes.
Oh, Fukuda's screwed. If he's not going to take him down, what is he going to do?
Exactly. This fight, Tavares is going to walk through this guy.
No, he's not going to walk through. He's going to toy with him. You know what Anderson did against Stephen Bonner? He's going to be like, dude, shoot for a takedown right now. it's like John Fitch issuing a challenge for black belts. Remember, like, you know, he issued his challenge for black belts about which one could choke him out. That's what he's going to do. But takedown. It's like, come at me, bro. Shoot. Maybe you're like, is that all? Where are your takedowns now, playboy? And then the judges were scored for Fukuda anyway because Tavares didn't do anything else but stuff takedowns.
That's right. Aggression.
I actually think Fukuda wins.
Sure. Who cares? Takeo Mizugaki against Brian Caraway. This is actually a fun little fight.
It's a fun little fight, but I think Mizugaki wins. I think, you know, Caraway, if...
Rousey by armbar.
Yeah. Well, you know, that joke was funny when you made it the first time, but come on now. Don't abuse it.
I make it every Brian Caraway fight.
Well, actually, if you ask certain media members, they'd probably think that prediction is true.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, Ronda Rousey could probably submit him. Yeah. Anyway, I think Mizugaki's a good enough grappler to avoid getting taken down by Carraway, and I think his aggression and clinch work actually, you know, justified in his favor on the feet. I like Mizugaki in this one.
Cristiano Marcelo against Kazuki Tokyo Dome. That's his name, Tokyo Dome.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought you were joking. That's no. Why I kind of hesitated. Wow,
I'm going
can you
for
get
him.
More Japanese than that?
Yeah. I'm going for Tokyo Dome.
No, I think Cristiano Marcelo win.
No, forget that. Tokyo Dome is like 90,000 people. How's Marcelo beating that? Fuck out of here.
All right.
Oh, man, this guy, he should be your new favorite fighter. Kyung Ho Kang. I don't know if he's related to Lou or not.
Why would he be my favorite fighter?
Hey, don't you use Liu Kang on Mortal Kombat?
Ah, not Kung Lao. I use Kung Lao.
Oh, well, Kung Yo, Kung Lao, whatever.
All right.
Difference?
Well, he sounds Korean anyway. Kung Lao and Liu Kang, I think, are Japanese. Oh. No, I think they're Chinese. Whatever. Oh, they're Japanese. They're Chinese, sorry, because they're Shaolin. Is he Shaolin? If he's Shaolin, he wins this fight.
Well, I think based on who he's fighting, you're going to pick him anyway.
I'll pick him based on principle, yes. He is Korean. See, there you go.
Do you know who he's fighting?
Yes, Alex Caceres.
Okay. I guess you looked it up.
Yeah, and unfortunately, being Korean means you're not Shaolin because Shaolin aren't Chinese, so he's not beating Alex Caceres, unfortunately. I think I'm going to keep picking against Alex Caceres on principle, but let's face it, he's not going to lose this fight. He's really not. He's going to win. Come on.
Marcelo Guillermares. Against Hungi Lim.
Okay, whatever. Lim wins.
Hungu Lim. That sounds like you hungry for some limbs.
Dude, don't stop it. That's stupid. Seriously, that's stupid.
I'd use that if I was a battle rapper. Slow it down. You didn't get that reference. Shout out to Stuart Lang if you're listening to this.
Yeah, I think he would have been listening, but then you completely killed him.
I don't know who I'm picking. Flip a coin. Who cares? I'm going with Hungu Lim. He's awesome. I still like Tokyo Dome the best. That's my new favorite fighter. I hope he wins on Saturday.
All right, cool.
Tokyo Dome.
All right. It is a tight name. I'll admit it's a pretty tight name, especially if you're. It'd be funnier if he wasn't Japanese. Like, his name is Tokyo Dome, but he's like, I don't know.
Chinese?
Yeah, I was just about to say.
He doesn't have a Wikipedia page either. Now I just feel bad for him. How does the Tokyo Dome not have a Wikipedia page?
Well, he will after this fight.
That's right. It should link to the actual Tokyo Dome Wikipedia page. Can I edit that to make it happen? Hold on. We're going to abuse Wikipedia on this podcast.
Dude.
I'm not sure I can. If I can, I'm not... I don't get how Wikipedia works. It's weird.
All right, let's move on.
All right, that's UFC on Fuel TV 8, I think, or 7. Really good main card, and then... a preliminary card on Facebook that everybody at the Tokyo Dome is going to watch. Samer, we recorded 3 hours worth of 2 podcasts.
Yeah, and I'm dead. I'm really dead. I've only slept 2 hours last night, and I'm exhausted. I was trying to work hard not to fall asleep during the podcast again. Like, let's just say there was a certain podcast where this actually happened. I'm not going to say.
Well, yeah, that card sucked. This card was actually good.
Yeah, so there was a lot to talk about for the Rousey podcast. And even for this one, there were plenty of intriguing fights. So, yeah, there was a lot to talk about.
All right, everybody.
That actually kept me awake, maybe... as did your sweet, sweet voice.
Thank you.
All right.
Hopefully we can continue making history going forward. I don't think this podcast is going to do 1.8 million, but it should set the...
Merely half a million. I think it'll set the record for Japanese cards or
something. Yeah. Definitely, definitely. We got to make sure those soccer moms come back and listen.
Japanese soccer moms aren't that huge on us, unfortunately.
You know who they are huge on?
Tokyo Dome.
Gomi Takanori! Thanks, everybody, for listening. Take care.
The end.